Morning, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to a special edition of Maryland Morning. Early voting gets underway tomorrow. A recent poll says that in the race for Baltimore mayor, State Senator Catherine Pugh leads with 31%, followed by former Mayor Sheila Dixon at 25%. Today, a debate with Elizabeth Embry and Carl Stokes. Embry's in third place.
We have to reclaim our streets. We need to be safe. We need to have schools that work for us and jobs and capital in our neighborhoods. And it's the most important election in our lifetime.
Carl Stokes is tied with Nick Mosby for fifth place.
For 4 years in a row, we locked up over 100,000 young African-American men. And now people are saying, Carl, why did we do that? Can we now turn our attention to saving our young people in this town?
They're behind in the polls, but both candidates say they have a way to win and what it takes to turn the city around. First, the news.
I'm producer Rob Sivak. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming online at wypr.org/listen. Now, on with the show.
Thanks, Nathan. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. It's crunch time for the candidates. Early voting in the Democratic and Republican primaries begins tomorrow. Election Day is 2 weeks from yesterday. Last week, we invited the top three candidates in the race for the Democratic nomination for mayor to debate here on Maryland Morning. At that time, polling indicated that State Senator Catherine Pugh, former Mayor Sheila Dixon, and businessman David Warnock held the top three spots. Since then, a new poll indicates that lawyer Elizabeth Embry is now in third place, trailing the leader, Senator Pugh, by about 22 points. Elizabeth Embry joins us this morning along with Councilman Carl Stokes. He is in fifth place in the latest poll, 26 points behind Senator Pugh. Last week, Senator Pugh was unable to participate in our Maryland Morning debate, citing schedule conflicts in Annapolis, where she serves as the majority leader in the Senate. So I spoke with former Mayor Dixon, Mr. Warnock, and Councilman Nick Mosby, who at that time was in fourth place in the polls. In the new poll, Mr. Mosby is now tied with Mr. Stokes for fifth place. And by the way, you can hear last week's conversation on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. The poll that the Baltimore Sun published last week indicates that Senator Pugh has greatly extended her advantage over her closest rival, former Mayor Dixon, whom she now leads by 6 points. We invited Senator Pugh to once again join the conversation this morning. I spoke with her on Monday, and she told me she had a schedule conflict and was not able to appear today on the program. So we are happy to spend the hour with Elizabeth Embry and Carl Stokes. There have been, by some estimates, more than 60 mayoral forums during the course of this campaign, which more often than not include 13 or more candidates for Charm City's highest office. Now, our intention last week and again today is to focus attention on the most viable candidates in this crowded field, which, as you know, does not include the incumbent mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake. So we'll spend the entire hour with the candidates, with a couple of breaks for the national news and the Environment in Focus, a regular Wednesday feature here on Maryland Morning. And as we did last week, after both candidates make an opening statement, I'll pose questions to each of them and encourage them to address each other as they parse out their policy differences and distinctions. They'll also each have the opportunity to make a closing statement at the end of the program. So we'll begin with Elizabeth Embry, who most recently served as the chief of the criminal division in the Maryland Attorney General's office. Welcome. Good to see you.
Tom, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here with my good friend, Councilman Carl Stokes. So I'm very excited. My campaign is real momentum, and the last 2 weeks is when voters, most voters, actually sort of pay attention and decide who they're going to vote for. And the poll has shown a lot of those are breaking my way. So we're excited. We see a clear path to victory. And I think what I represent is the ability to do things differently in the city and to have good government and to have government that makes a difference in people's lives. And just yesterday, the Sun editorial board said my plan for accountability and transparency in government is the best and really gets to the heart of what we need in Baltimore, which is honest government, which is government that spends our tax dollars wisely, that audits, that provides data in a transparent way. And also, you know, as I've been running on from the beginning, I know how to make us safe and I know how to reform our criminal justice system. And I've gotten, you know, rave reviews from the Sun and from City Paper on that as well. So I'm very excited about the surge in momentum in my campaign. And I'm excited in the next 2 weeks to keep drawing supporters and pull this off.
All right. Well, it's good to have you here. And Councilman Stokes, you've represented the 12th District on the Baltimore City Council. Good
yes.
to have you here as well, sir.
Great. I'm glad to be here. I represented the 12th District, YPR, as a matter of fact.
Indeed.
Indeed. The women home base. So I am Very happy also to be here with my second favorite mayoral candidate. And I mean that greatly. This is a challenging time in the city. It's a great time always in Baltimore City. We are, you know, one of the leading cities in the world in terms of culture, in terms of art, in terms of history, great poet, et cetera. But many challenges that, you know, I was asked last night, many of us were asked last night, how would we cheerlead the city? How would we change the perspective that goes forward about our city? And when you look at the WIRE or look at some other programs, and my answer is that rather than falsely cheerlead, we should take up the challenges that are a part of our city. Very honestly, we know that we have a great city, but we also know that our schools aren't working well for children in this town. 89% of our fourth graders are reading and doing math below grade level. We know that we cannot have a city that will function well for that. We can't ask people to move here, to live here, to stay here when their children can't get an education. We know we must change the reality if we want to change the perspectives that people see us as. I am the guy who has tried my best to stand up for the citizens, the average citizens of this city. Whether it's giveaway tax breaks to the very wealthiest of our citizens, while so many of our neighborhoods do not have even live trees in their blocks, or there are too many boarded up homes. We're going to talk today, I know, about the reasons and what fors here. And I want to be very clear. Many people have said that the candidates are just different iterations of the same. We are not. We are not the same by far. And we're going to talk about that today. CarlStokes2016.com is where folk can go to read as much as they want about the campaign and to get in touch also.
All right. So we are in the final couple of weeks in what has been a really unprecedented kind of sui generis campaign with the number of candidates, the length of the campaign. I mean, some of the candidates, you know, announced as early as last summer. But Elizabeth Embry, so many people look at this now as a two-person race. So let's talk about politics. Let's talk about logistics and the strategy. What is your way forward? 22 points is a big deficit to make. That's where you're behind, at least in the latest poll that voters were polled the 1st through the 4th of April. So it's not all that long ago. The leader is at 31. You're at 9. Mr. Stokes is at 5. What is the way forward for you?
Let me say a couple of things. One is that polls favor incumbents. They favor career politicians. And I have basically had to introduce myself to the city of Baltimore during this campaign. And what we're seeing in the surge that I've experienced is that it's working. And if you look at the number of undecided and you look at the number of people who say they softly support the senator, they're supporting her, I would argue in large part because she's not Sheila Dixon. Not because they're excited, but because they just are very concerned about having Mayor Dixon return to office for reasons that I share. If you look at the undecideds and the soft support and the people willing to change their vote if they had a better option, the numbers are absolutely there. And I would also point out it's a poll that's landline only of older voters. And so if you look at the whole city as we do and the entire voting population of people who don't have landlines, people who don't rely on landlines, our numbers are even higher than that. So that's just a snapshot of a section of the electorate. And when you think about how few votes are needed to win in this election, which I think is sad for Baltimore, but it could be as few as 20,000 votes or even fewer that win this election. It's really going to go to the candidate who gets their supporters excited and to the polls.
Well, for what it's worth, I spoke with Steve Robbie of OpinionWorks, the firm in Annapolis that conducted the poll, and I asked him this question about the landline thing. And he said that it did incorporate cell phones and that they were very confident that they had a good sampling of people with cell phones and landlines. But Carl Stokes, Ms. Embry brings up a point that if people are concerned about returning former Mayor Dixon to office because she was, of course, dismissed from office after a misdemeanor conviction and such drama and turmoil was inflicted on the city during that whole period. There are folks who make the argument that a vote for anybody except Senator Pugh is tantamount to a vote for Mayor Dixon because the two of them are so close. How do you respond to your supporters and people who may be thinking about supporting you to that particular political theory?
Well, first, I don't believe that's true. And I also think that the more we talk about the poll, the more we legitimize the whole thing. I had a conversation off air with Polk, who not to damn or demonize the media, but the media has decided who everybody is and where they are. Last night, we were on a televised debate, and the perceived front runners were giving twice as many questions, twice as much airtime as Elizabeth, Embry, and myself, for example. So we're waiting this all, you know, driving it forward. You know, much of what has been driven is also by dollars, by amount, how much folk have raised and how much they've spent on advertising. And you do read through the polls and you see that you're looking at very soft support, very soft support, other than the former mayor, whose support is as solid as it's going to be. I don't know if it'll grow, but it is as solid as it can be.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. It's about 9:16 in the morning, and Catherine Pugh, the state senator, has just joined us quite unexpectedly, and we're delighted to see you, Senator. Welcome.
Thank you. You know I have a scheduling conflict because I have to be somewhere else, and that I was supposed to be somewhere else this morning.
That's what you told me on
yeah,
Monday, right?
And
so how long do we have you then for this morning?
I'll be here probably till at least 9:35.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you here.
Hey, how are you?
Well, of course, you know Councilman Stokes and Ms. Embry quite well, having appeared on many, forums together. Senator Pugh, let me ask you the question I've just asked these two in terms of the way forward for other candidates. You've mentioned that a majority of the people who say they have a second choice cite you as the second choice.
Absolutely.
Do you see this as a race just between you and former Mayor Dixon, and how close do you perceive it?
Well, let me just say that I always tell people that we're running like we're 10 points behind. I've read the survey quite well, and I think the analysis of the Sun papers was done quite well as also, what the Sun papers actually said, that it was a race between two people and that it would be very difficult for anyone else in this race to catch up. But I don't, you know, I look at this race as one that you got to continue to take your message to the public, and that's what I'm doing. And I see this race as moving the city forward and not backwards. I see this race in a way where creative ideas are very important. I also see it as a race where people must make a choice in terms of what we want the image of our city to be, how we see our city in the future, and who has the greatest plans and ideas for moving our city forward. So I don't, you know, I understand the polls. I believe them because we also had put our poll in the street around the same time. And our poll mirrored that of the Sun papers. In fact, when I shared with someone there our poll, they said that, in fact, the day before, that they were very similar. So I'm very comfortable with the analysis of the poll, but more importantly, I think it's important to continue to take the message to the people.
And, of course, the only poll that counts is the one that happens on the 26th of April.
It is certainly up to the voters.
Yeah. But Ms. Embry, for example, what do you make of the – we've talked a lot about how this is a change election.
Yes.
I mean, there's no incumbent running. This is a wide open field. But what do you make of the fact that since the beginning, when polls began to be taken in this race back in November, the two leaders have been the people who have been, you know, in politics in this town for a long, long time?
Oh,
I got to give you about 10 seconds to answer that question.
Okay. So very quickly, that's typical across this country. I mean, incumbents and career politicians, because of name recognition, tend to do well in polls. Happy to talk more about it when we come back.
We're going to pick up on that in just a second. On 88.1, you're listening to our mayoral debate here on Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us this morning, we're devoting our program to a debate between three of the 13 candidates for the Democratic nomination for mayor of Baltimore. They were among the leader in the most recent poll published last week. State Senator Catherine Pugh led that survey with 31%. Former Mayor Sheila Dixon was at 25%. Lawyer Elizabeth Embry came in third with support of 9% of likely voters. Councilman Carl Stokes was in fifth, drawing 5% support in that poll, tied with Nick Mosby, just behind businessman David Warnock, who was at 7%. By the way, more than two-thirds of those surveyed in the Sun UB poll said that they could change their mind. In addition to her six-point lead over former Mayor Dixon, 23% of likely voters said that Senator Catherine Pugh was their second choice, 10% cited Carl Stokes, and 7% said Elizabeth Embry was their second choice. But as we said, we all know the polls can be wrong, and that the only poll that counts is the one that is tallied after the votes are counted on Election Day, April 26. Early voting begins tomorrow, so now we'll continue our conversation with Elizabeth Embry, State Senator Catherine Pugh, and Councilman Carl Stokes. Ms. Embry, I want to ask you to address Senator Pugh, about an issue that you've brought up a couple of times, well, more than a couple of times in this campaign. You brought it up again last night on WBAL. And this is the issue of campaign contributions that she has received from certain corporate contributors, in particular BGE. What specifically do you find wrong about that? And why is this a concern that you raised on multiple occasions?
Thank you very much. And I appreciate you coming, Senator, because I think these are issues that I think the voters should understand your position on. So, and for me, it comes down to judgment and management, which I think are directly relevant to being mayor. The first issue is $66,000 in checks that were from corporations that don't exist or people that don't have the money. And the initial explanation by your campaign was it was a result of typos, when in fact they had either bounced or been dishonored. There's some the city paper's done an extensive investigation, and it's still, there's a lot of unanswered questions. The second issue is the issue of soliciting lobbyists in Annapolis for donations during session. And as you know, if you are running for state office, it's illegal, but the state rules have allowed people running for local office to solicit at the local level during session so that they're not, you know, penalized if they're running for local office during session. But certainly the intent is not to solicit lobbyists who are appearing before your committee. You've said it's appropriate and ethical. I obviously respectfully disagree. I don't think it's appropriate to hold fundraisers from lobbyists who are trying to get bills passed during session in front of your committee. It's something that I would have thought you would want to fight to change that law rather than take advantage of it. But I would be very interested in your explanation of both the checks that are clearly illegal, whether or not your campaign knew it, and then the question of whether it's appropriate, not legal, but whether it's appropriate to solicit funds from lobbyists who are trying to get bills passed in Annapolis.
All right, Senator, your response.
First of all, Tom, I think you do have a letter from Common Cause and also from BGE. And I think every single candidate, and I think BGE will attest to that, has in fact asked BGE for money. Every single one.
I do. I have a letter from Calvin Butler, which was sent to the folks who work at BGE. And this came because I was interested last week when Ms. Dixon and Mr. Warnock in particular were here. I asked them if they would have accepted a contribution from BGE, and they both said categorically no, they wouldn't. I must say that that sounds disingenuous, given the fact that Mr. Butler wrote a letter that says, quote, all of the top-tier mayoral candidates have sought support from BGE and individual employees. That would include you. That would include Mr. Stokes.
Yeah, I would take exception to that letter, and I hadn't seen that letter before. I don't even know what that means. We've from individual employees and from BGE. BGE does have a – anyway, I'm out of it.
But Tom, the important issue is that's not wrong. The entire issue here is whether a state senator who has bills relating to BGE pending before her should be soliciting from those lobbies.
And
that is the issue.
And first of all, let me just be real clear that I did not solicit from BGE, that Calvin Butler is a friend, and so is his wife.
He's the president of BGE.
He's president of BGE. And the amount of money that I received in a fundraiser from his wife, who did a fundraiser for me, and a fundraiser from him, were minuscule in terms of much of the money that had been received by other folks from other entities, as you well know, whether it is, and I don't need to call names, and let me just say, I think, as I said last night, desperate people do desperate things, but at the same time, let me also say that you also have a letter from Common Cause that stated that Catherine Pugh and her campaign did absolutely nothing illegal. And as it relates to campaign reform, you know, I've always been on the front line as it relates to Common Cause and campaign reform. So as the laws change, Catherine Pugh will continue to abide by the laws and regulations. And I carried no bills for any lobbyists this session. In fact, you'll see that most of the legislation that I passed, including the LEOBR legislation, is about people
and
purpose.
That's the Law Enforcement Officer Bill of Rights.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so I don't believe that anyone should be, and in fact, there were exactly six legislators that were running for office outside of their own offices. And before I ever even take donations from anyone, the first thing I do is sit down with the ethics board and ask the question, what are we allowed to do and what are we not allowed to do? And the laws were explained to me very clearly. Now, as it relates to Ms. Embry's question about the Board of Estimates, having not sat on the Board of Estimates before, you know, I don't solicit donations. In fact, before every session, I hold a fundraiser, and most of those contributions came in during the January fundraiser that I hold, and many lobbyists from every single end of the earth.
I think really, if I might interrupt, I think what this really comes down to is, Ms. Embry, do you believe that Senator Pugh is an unethical person and not qualified to be the mayor because of it? Or do you believe that anybody else in the race is a fundamentally unethical person? When I asked Ms. Dixon and Mr. Warnock that very question, you know, is Senator Pugh unethical? Frankly, she ducked it. She said, I don't want to be involved in negativity. And this is while I'm holding a campaign flyer that is that says that, you know, Catherine Pugh is in the pocket of BGE. I mean, for voters, this is what it comes down to. Are the other people in this race ethically challenged?
So my view is it comes down to judgment, and that is why I've raised it, because Baltimore City more than ever needs a mayor who is going to run a transparent and ethical government. And these are important questions about judgment and what you think. The question is not what's legal, it's what's right. And that is what voters need to focus on. And so I've raised it because I think voters need to understand conflicts of interest. They need to understand that we need a mayor who's not under investigation from day one, who we don't have to worry about, are they soliciting from lobbyists who want business before the city. It comes down, again, to what's right.
We're going to leave this seconds here.
I mean, first of all, I'm not under investigation. And secondly, I think I've been in office for 15 years, never been ethically challenged at all. And I've always operated with transparency and always put my information right out there in front of people.
We're going to leave this issue
And let me just
there.
Be real clear. I've run no negative campaigns. I've never said anything negative about anybody who's running. I think you run on your record and you run on the purpose of people. And that's the kind of campaign that I've run thus
right.
far.
Senator
and
Catherine
I look forward
Pugh,
to continuing to do
Lawyer
that.
Elizabeth Embry and Councilman Carl Stokes joining me here on 88.1 WYPR. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Carl Stokes, let's talk about the issue of race in our city.
Yes.
We had riots and an uprising that laid bare the issues of racial and economic inequality just a year ago. It's interesting that in the poll taken in November, Catherine Pugh was seen as attracting actually more white support than either Mr. Warnock or Ms. Embry, the two white candidates in the race. How important is the fact that a candidate, or are you a candidate, for example, who can bring the city together? It's a 60% black city, 40% white city with, you know, Hispanic and Asians, of course, part of that mix. Who's best prepared to bring our city together for racial unity?
Well, I think several candidates are. I don't think that any one of us is any more special than other in this particular area. I have represented a very diverse district all of my political career. I served 8 years in the late 80s, early 90s, and of was out for 15 years. And in that time, I've served Charles Village, where we are now. I've served Remington. I've served Hamden. I've served East Baltimore. I've served Patterson Park. I've served a very diverse black, white, and brown district for several years. And we've all gotten along all the time. I was always the leading vote getter. And so I very much can bring the city together. I'm not a guy who runs around throwing racial bombs out at folk. I do throw back when people throw their racist sort of comments, and I will push you back, whether you're being racist on one side or the other, or being a sexist, or et cetera. So I am, but I got to tell you, I'm not the only person. There are several, if not all of us, who can bring our city together. None of us are playing the politics of racism here. I'm very actually proud, and I know we shouldn't always be talking about each other so well, but I am actually very proud of the group of individuals who have stepped forward to run for mayor of the city. I think I'm the best. There's no question about that. But I am very proud that we have great group.
And Elizabeth Embry, were you to be elected, there'd be at least for a time being, there'd be a white mayor and a white police commissioner. Would that matter, given what our city's been through in the last year?
I think more than ever right now in Baltimore, we need effective leadership. And I don't think it's about color. I think it's about the ability to change things in the city in ways that we haven't seen in decades. And it's about transforming the way we approach policing so that it's about keeping people out of prison, not putting them in prison. It's about having a strategy on having jobs and putting people into jobs and growing the prosperity of the city in a way that affects all of us. And it's about a mayor who actually takes ownership of our school system, which we've not seen since the 90s, and says, we're going to have a quality education for every student in the system.
Catherine Pugh, the number one concern of voters in the last three times that they were polled, November, January, and then earlier this month, is crime and public safety. Can you tell us what is different about your approach to community policing? Everybody agrees that community policing is the way to go, some form of community policing, as opposed to, you know, the broken windows, so-called broken windows strategy of policing. But can you tell us what would be different about your coordination of the efforts in the police department and in terms of public safety than we're experiencing now under Mayor Rawlings Blake or that we experienced in previous administrations?
Well, let me just say I had the opportunity to serve on President Obama's Police Commission Reform Commission. I'm also co-chairing the Police Reform Commission here in the state of Maryland. And I have a great relationship with our current police commissioner and also a relationship with the FOP. And one of the things that I've said to them, that transparency is absolutely necessary, that strengthening our police review commission is absolutely necessary, and that we have to put more strength in our civilian review board. We have passed the LEOBR, as you well know, because I led that charge. And but all through that process, I sat down and talked with the police department about
what we need to change. Are you happy with the changes to the LEOBR? This is the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights. It's a very controversial thing.
Yeah, I'm happy with the fact that we will have the right to negotiate with the police department as it relates to having... We didn't just want members sitting on the review panels. We want members who can vote on the review panels.
We're talking about civilians reviewing the actions of the police.
Right, and so we'll have two. And I had a conversation with...
But will they be able to vote?
Yes. But that will be negotiated with the police department, and I've had conversations with the FOP about that, as well as with
the
police commission.
It's the Fraternal Order of Police.
Yeah, because we have to. I mean, it's important. And I said to them, I said, if we're ever going to have the relationship that we need to have with the police, that there's got to be trust on both sides of the aisle. And this is part of that requirement. And so I think that that will happen. But one of the things that concerns me is that 75% of our police officers do not live in our city. And during this session, we did pass legislation providing additional incentives. And I think I've heard you say before that we ought to have incentives for teachers and everybody else. And we do, in fact, but we should do more. Because when you have that many people in your city, working in your city, it's hard to develop those kinds of relationships. So we want police walking our beats. We also need to light up our city. But we want that relationship to be strong. We want programs like PAL to be strengthened in our city. But we need our police to know our communities and our communities to know the police department. And so we'll continue to work with that.
Carl Stokes, you have thrown out the number 238 as the violent offenders in our city whom we know are violent offenders.
Yeah.
And repeat violent offenders.
Right, that's what the police commissioner says. That's what the state prosecutor says, that there are 238 repeat violent offenders in the city of Baltimore. And I say, well, let's go get them. Let's go take them off the street. If we know specifically there are 238, then we know specifically who they are. How else did we get a number? How else did we count them?
Just sounds so easy. Then why don't we just send out a bunch of paddy wagons and go pick them up right now?
Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? Doesn't that make sense? What we should do is surveil these people because they're lawless people. It's not as if they're just committing violent crimes. They're committing all sorts of crimes. They're spitting on the street. They're jaywalking, whatever they're doing. Listen, we are not policing.
So that sounds like a return to the broken windows.
No.
Form.
Do not harass people. If you are doing good policing, you know who's doing the wrong things. Obviously, we already know. We know there are 238. We know the number. So we don't have to arrest 100,000 people on the street.
Just those 238.
We need to surveil them and make sure that they're taking off.
We got 10 seconds. Senator Pugh, I'm going
to
give you the last 10 seconds because you got to go.
One of the things that when you talk about that group of folks are the illegal guns that they have on the streets. And with the police commissioner and myself, we went to Annapolis with that legislation to make it illegal. I mean, because now you get a PBJ.
The illegal possession, not necessarily
of guns on our street. And you talk about commission of
probation before judgment.
Exactly. But we got to do better than that. And the police commissioner wants to do that. We put it before the judge.
And we've got to take a break. You're listening to a special edition of Maryland Morning on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall, joined in the studio by lawyer Elizabeth Embry, who has served most recently as the chief of the criminal division of the Maryland Attorney General's Office. Councilman Carl Stokes represents Baltimore's 12th District and State Senator Catherine Pugh. We'll have more of our conversation with two of these three Democratic mayor. Senator Pugh needs to leave for mayor of Baltimore after a break for a national news. First, it's time for our regular Wednesday feature, The Environment in Focus. On 88.1 It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. We'll continue now with our debate between three of the 13 Democratic candidates for mayor of Baltimore. State Senator Catherine Pugh, former Mayor Sheila Dixon, and lawyer Elizabeth Embry were the top three in a poll conducted by OpinionWorks in Annapolis earlier this month. That poll was commissioned by the Baltimore Sun and the University of Baltimore. Sheila Dixon, David Warnock, and Nick Mosby debated here on Maryland Morning last Wednesday. Elizabeth Embry, Carl Stokes, and Senator Catherine Pugh join me this morning. Elizabeth Embry, let me give you a chance to comment on the issue of public safety. This is something you've been quite involved in your professional life.
Thank you. And, you know, I think we are in a crisis of safety right now, and we have got to get it right because it's holding us back in so many ways and costing the lives of our brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers across the city. And so I'm the only one in the race who has done the work of making our city safer and reforming our criminal justice system. And as deputy state's attorney, through hard work and through relentless efforts around who are the people committing the crimes, who are hurting other people, we actually saw a significant decrease in the violent crime rate and saw homicides under 200 for the first time in 40 years, which is a big deal in a city that has been so violent for so long. And as chief of the criminal division and as director of the mayor's office of criminal justice, I've understood, you know, both within the city and statewide, what we need to do to get it right in the city. So we can look back and say, I can't believe we used to be so violent when it was possible to be safe. And my plan, which has been reviewed not just by the Sun, but by practitioners and by professional experts in crime prevention, it's the best. And it's the best because it addresses violent crime and it takes advantage of what's worked in the city, but also what's worked across the country. And it also addresses interventions that keep people out of the system altogether.
Let me ask each of you to comment briefly before I ask you to make a final statement. And Mr. Stokes, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, the current mayor, had to make tough choices, she tells us, in a budget that she's recently proposed, which includes $4.2 million in cuts for after-school programs. And she talks about these really difficult choices you have to make as the mayor when you're doing things like the budget and, you know, articulating the priorities of the city. What is the guiding philosophical notion that animates your approach to spending the resources of our city?
I think we have to spend the resources first and of the most vulnerable of all communities and citizens. The mayor has never had a problem finding money for wealthy people who wanted tax breaks. Never. In communities across the city, in schools, in young people, in seniors, she's always had it difficult to find the money to take care of those issues that most impact on families' lives, on the lives of families. But never has she found any action, no way, no how could she not find money for wealthy contributors.
Senator Pugh, what do you think? What animates you? When you take a look at those hard numbers, when you've got to deal with these really difficult budget situations, how do you approach that problem?
I think you have to prioritize the issues that you are very most concerned about. There has to be a focus on our schools. You know, we are contributing a little more than we did previously in other administrations, but we need to get that up to 35%. Which is what is happening around jurisdiction. So you have to prioritize your budget. You got to make sure that you're, you know, doing the kind of services that people expect, policing and making sure education is where it needs to be. And you have to be transparent.
Is policing a matter of more resources to the police department?
No, I think it's how you align your police department, you know, how you align the folks who work there. Some of those jobs need to be separated in terms of civil service positions as opposed to the police officers who walk the beats of your street. The other issue for us as it relates to the budget is how many people are actually in our budget. And I think it's important for the next mayor not only to be transparent about the budget, but to scrub the budget and look at how you're deploying your resources and how you're partnering with other folks in our communities, the business community, the philanthropic communities. When we talk about jobs and job opportunities, who are you working with? How are you making sure that the needs of the people in the city are being met?
And Elizabeth Embry, every election cycle, we talk about, you know, eliminating waste from the city budget. You've talked and others have talked about the paucity of audits, you know, going on. Do we know what each department is spending? Do we know how effectively they're working? Is it a matter of, you know, rooting out the waste and finding the money?
Yes, and I feel very strongly that we are not spending our money in a smart way, and we have to spend our money around what works, and we have to audit our system so that we know that we're using every dollar wisely, and there's countless examples right now of how we're not doing that. And I feel very strongly that the $4.2 million should be reinstalled in the budget. I think it's incredibly important that we invest in after-school and out-of-school time. And an example of poor management is our police overtime budget, which is $49 million. And that is really about management. It's about not being able to fill our recruitment classes, not being able to fully staff shifts. And it's we get in this cycle where we're spending more money to do things poorly instead of getting ahead of the problem and spending money to make a difference.
Carl Stokes, some final thoughts in about 45 seconds, please.
Yeah, so I'm Carl Stokes at carlstokes2016.com. I came back to city government 5 years and I found a mess. I'm a small business guy. You know, we talk about the audits. I'm the guy who came back and realized that the city wasn't auditing its books on most of its departments. And I demanded that we do that. Had to force legislation through the city council. So now it's the law. It's amazing. I had to pass a law. We are sitting on our hands too much in this city. When I talk about the 238 people who are, of course, we don't just send out paddy wagons and pick them up, but we do the work. We do the homework that allows us to take these persons off the street by doing it the right way. We are so lazy. We're not an urgent city anymore. We are not saying, let's fix our schools tomorrow or the next couple of years. Kids can't work for a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. We can't cut money from the after school program. We cannot continue to run the city so poorly. We need to manage the city much better, more efficiently. I will do that. I have done that. I'm the guy standing in the gap between an inefficient government and a much, much, much prosperous city.
Senator Pugh, is it a matter of, getting just simply more jazzed up and more animated and having a better sense of urgency? Your final thoughts.
Well, let me just say I'm excited about being the next mayor of Baltimore. I will move our city forward, focused on how we take control of our school system and make sure we leverage our budget so that it represents the needs of our children in the future. I'm focused on moving our city forward and not backwards in terms of how we reduce crime and policing that it meets the needs of our city and our communities. I'm focused on that 77,000 unemployed individuals who live in our city and how to creatively make sure that they get jobs. I'm focused on how we bring the business and the philanthropic community and all of these individuals in our communities together so that we understand that when we lift the least of us, we lift all of us. I'm focusing on leveraging partnerships in our city that will result in greater communities and greater neighborhoods. I am focused on moving our city forward in terms of how we focus on building downtown, but at the same time, focus on rebuilding our neighborhoods and our communities and creating communities where our city streets are lit, where people in our communities can walk out and feel safe about our neighborhoods and our communities. I'm focused on how we build great communities and focus on our people and our All children, right. our city. We will move this city forward, and I look forward to the opportunity
Thank
to
you.
Be the next mayor
and
of Baltimore.
Elizabeth Embry, your focus.
Thank you. So I think Baltimore deserves better than the low expectations that have been bred of city government from our leadership for so many years. We have to do better. And the two issues that are facing Baltimore that are, I think, the two top issues are public trust and public safety. And on both issues, the Baltimore Sun has said, my plans are the best. The city paper has said, I'm the best position to root out fraud and corruption and waste in our city government. And we have to have a mayor who we can trust, to make a difference in the way we spend money, in the way that we make government actually responsive to people and responsive to our communities. And I am fighting against that culture of low expectations and saying, Baltimore, we can do better.
Well, I appreciate all of you throwing your hat in the ring and putting yourselves out here as candidates for our city. I know that your love for this city is quite authentic and sincere, and I appreciate all of you being here. Thank you so much. I'm Tom
Thank
Hall.
You.
This has been a special edition of Maryland Morning here on 88.1 WIP. My thanks to Deputy Attorney General Elizabeth Embry, City Councilman Carl Stokes, and Senator Catherine Pugh for being with us this morning. And thanks to you for tuning in to hear what they've had to say. If you missed part of our discussion or to hear my individual interviews with each of the candidates in this crowded Democratic field, including former Mayor Sheila Dixon, businessman David Warnock, and Councilman Nick Mosby, come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. Early voting in this important election begins tomorrow. Election Day is April 26th. Stay tuned to Maryland Morning and to WIPR for continuing coverage of the races up and down the ballot, including on election night, when I'll anchor complete coverage of all of the races here in Maryland in conjunction with NPR's coverage of the other primaries that are taking place that day in Pennsylvania, Delaware, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. Coming up Friday on Maryland Morning, another in a series of our conversations about race as we approach the anniversary of the uprising that occurred after the funeral of Freddie Gray. I'll speak with two scholars from an organization called Black Minds Matter, plus sports with Mark Hyman and planning ahead for Healthcare Decision Day. Until then, for Nathan Sterner and the entire Maryland Morning team, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.